Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. Though you may not realize that the ongoing threat of terrorism is affecting your life and that of your loved ones. Each week, Dr. Carol analyzes the hottest topics in terror and helps you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror.
Who scares you more, domestic or foreign terrorists? Welcome to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist, and your terrorist therapist. Well, yes, have you ever asked yourself this question, who scares you more, domestic or foreign terrorists? Well, typically, you know, we think about foreign terrorists, but these past weeks, there has been an upswing in the number of incidents of domestic terrorists. And I'm going to talk about that with you today, as well as the potential onslaught. Now, I'm not talking necessarily about, you know, the Middle East. I'm talking about, in terms of foreign terrorists, well, I'm talking about ISIS and so on, the usual suspects. But I'm going to be talking a little bit today about the potential threat of them joining the caravan, the migrant caravan coming up from Central America. But first, let's just talk about how we're feeling right now. Because there is, ask yourself about this. Are you feeling nervous? Have you been having more trouble sleeping? Have you been noticing signs of stress in your daily life? Are you irritable? Are you sad? Are you angry? Do you feel it's getting all too much? Well, you're not alone, because not only have there been these acts of domestic terrorists recently, but politicians are using these acts to blame each other. So it's not only the acts, and of course I'm talking about the pipe bomber and the Pittsburgh synagogue shooter. Those were the two main ones recently. But, you know, in addition to these horrendous acts, there is the additional stress of, you know, people all using these acts to blame each other for, to get an edge for the elections coming up. So there's a definite drumbeat underscoring all of our lives, because election day and migrants at the door day are getting closer. And we've seen with the examples of the pipe bomber and the synagogue shooter that this drumbeat is pushing people with mental problems off the deep end. As you may have heard in a previous podcast or show, I have talked about how people with mental illness are more vulnerable to being used by terrorists, by foreign terrorists, by ISIS-type terrorists, or any kind of terrorists. In this case, it could be just political terrorists who, you know, want to get them to do things to get an edge, particularly now in regard to the elections. These things have been, so as these domestic terrorist acts and as the migrants caravans and election day are all coming closer and closer, we're having this drumbeat that's making us all feel more stressed. And some people are being whipped up into a frenzy. Many people feel as if their life depends upon who wins this election. You know, I can't help thinking it's like color war at camp, heading to the final competition. I used to go to camp all the time, and color war was a big deal. And the final competition, you know, as each team was scoring points, the final competition became more frenzied as we got to that final competition. However, this is not color war. It's has much more violent and dangerous stakes. Meanwhile, we'll talk a little bit about the migrant caravan and, you know, Trump's warnings that there are terrorists in this caravan and so on, and people saying that he's overreacting and that's not true. Well, I think, you know, I think it is likely true. I mean, if you were a terrorist and there were thousands of people coming into America from whichever border, it could be Canada, you know, Canadians wouldn't do that, but because most of them are fairly happy in their own country. But, and yes, it is awful. You know, I want to make sure it's clear that I feel incredible sympathy and compassion for people living in situations, not just in Honduras and some other Central American countries, but I mean, Syria and Yemen, and there are lots of countries where the situations are horrible, and poverty, famine, and so on. And, you know, we need to help. I'm all for the U.S. helping these countries to develop more and to make people want to stay in their countries or to apply to the U.S. legally. Anyway, when this election happens, when the results are in, about half of America is going to be let down. And there's also, you know, as I was saying, it's also this drumbeat of migrants getting closer to the U.S. Trump recently talking about that if the migrants throw rocks, that the soldiers, the troops who have been brought to the border, essentially, he stopped just short of saying that they can shoot them, but that was, you know, that was certainly implied. And that would be incredibly sad. But I don't know if you've seen videos, news videos, of what happened when the migrants entered Mexico, but some of them were attacking the Mexican troops. So it is going to be an awful, when they finally reach the border, it is, unless something can happen to make a more peaceful solution, it is going to be a drama that is going to be very unsettling to everyone. So, but let me go back to the domestic terrorists this week. There, you know, for the first incident was that started October 22nd, actually, where we started having an epidemic of pipe bombs being received in the mail via the U.S. Postal Service to people who were critics of President Trump. So this included people like Barack Obama, former U.S. President Barack Obama, former Vice President Joe Biden, former Secretary of State and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Then there were various U.S. representatives, senators, an attorney general, CNN, you know, they were trying to reach people through CNN, and then George Soros and Robert De Niro, because these were all critics of President Trump. And they were sent IEDs, improvised explosive devices. None of the devices fortunately exploded. And this barrage of pipe bombs started on October 22nd. And we really don't know whether we've seen the last of them. I mean, probably we have. But of course, the man who was arrested for this, Cesar Altieri Sayoc, Jr., who was arrested in Florida on October 26th, is not saying, because he's not going to, of course, implicate himself by saying, you know, that there are more pipe bombs in the mail. And we don't know, hopefully there aren't. But now when I saw the packages of these pipe bombs, I recognized right away that this was the work of someone who was mentally ill. I, you know, starting with my training at NYU Bellevue, where, needless to say, I worked a lot with people who were schizophrenic and manic depressive, also called bipolar, people who were psychotic, and seen some of their packages and their writings and so on. And it looks like that. And then, you know, as we've come to learn more about Caesar Sayoc, it seems to be clear that although he has never been diagnosed, because he apparently would never agree to get psychiatric treatment, he was never formally diagnosed. But his mental problems started when he was in his young teens, when his father, who was Filipino, abandoned him and went back to the Philippines. And his mother, saw that he started having mental problems, although he was graduated from high school and he did go to college for a while. He was born in Brooklyn, and then he moved to Florida as a child. And his mother was born in the Bronx, and she's of Italian heritage. And he was living for a while at his mother's house, but she, at some point, threw him out. He wouldn't get treatment, and he had a very poor job history. Started to go to college. He Brevard College, and then he transferred to the University of North Carolina, and he played on the school soccer team. Who are you more afraid of, a domestic or foreign terrorist? And neither one lets us sleep well at night. But we have had a particularly difficult week in terms of acts of domestic terrorism. I've been talking about the pipe bomber, who Caesar Sayoc, who was mentally ill. I think that, you know, I've kind of come to, he hasn't been diagnosed formally, but as I've been studying him, it seems to me that originally I thought he was paranoid. It's a toss-up, actually, between paranoid schizophrenic and manic depressive. In either case, he hasn't been taking any meds because he hasn't gone for psych treatment. He could possibly be schizoaffective schizophrenic. But in any case, and as such, potentially easily co-opted by someone who wanted to either hurt or kill critics of President Trump, or it has also been thought that it could have been set up by Democrats to look like look like he was a Trump supporter, which he certainly one would think that he was from his van and his posts and so on. But the alternative theory was that he was really just set up by Democrats to make it look like, Trump infuriates people and sets them up to do all of these crazy things. So, of course, another possibility, if he has been under somebody's control, influenced by a terrorist of some sort, domestic or foreign. I mean, there is the possibility of ISIS being involved in some way, although ISIS, I don't think ISIS has claimed responsibility. But there was an ISIS flag attached to some of the bombs, although it was actually a parody of the ISIS flag. But again, you know, is that just a setup to make it look like a parody, to look like it's not ISIS? I mean, when someone is mentally ill, you have to take all these potential influences into consideration. In any case, one of the reasons why also that kind of implicates terrorism, ISIS type terrorism, is that in 2002, Caesar called in a bomb threat to Florida Power and Light because they were cutting off his electricity, or his, presumably his electricity, And he wanted to, and he was very angry. And he threatened them that they would see an attack that was greater than 9/11. So this man clearly, from that threat to Florida Power and Light and the ISIS flags on the bombs, I mean, he does he does have ISIS on his mind, shall we say, or Al-Qaeda in any case, not with 9/11, but that kind of terrorism on his mind. He's also been arrested for other kinds of things and convicted, such as theft, battery, drug possession, and so on. And he has a very interesting job history. He was a bodybuilder. Now, another thing that kind of complicates his psychiatric diagnosis is that he abused steroids. So in fact, you know, one could argue that it was a steroid psychosis, or the steroids activated an underlying genetically genetic predisposition to schizophrenia or manic depressive illness. But he has been a stripper. He was an owner of a, well, he claimed to be an owner of a strip club, or at least to be a manager of strippers. That seems to be possible, but he claimed to be a partner in Chippendales, which Chippendales has denied. He has made a number of false claims. He claimed that he played soccer for AC Milan and football for the Arizona Rattlers. He's, you know, he's made, which is kind of, which is, these claims, these grandiose claims, are typical of the grandiosity of mania. And he's also started two businesses that failed, that didn't get very far. He called one proud Native American, one low price dry cleaning. And then he did Native American catering and vending. Neither one of them were a success. He had his home foreclosed in 2009. He filed Chapter 7 bankruptcy in 2012. I mean, he was living on the outskirts of society and not being able to succeed in anything that he did. When he was, the last job that he had, well, the next to last job that he had was part-time deliveries for a pizzeria in Fort Lauderdale. And then when he was arrested, he was working as a DJ and a doorman at a West Palm Beach strip club. He is a registered Republican. He has been seen at Trump events, rallies. He wearing a Make America Great hat, Great Again hat, and so on. His claims to be a Seminole Indian do not seem to be, at least the Seminoles are not claiming him, do not want to be associated with him. But, and also his, a lot of information about his childhood and so on has been gleaned from a lawyer, a family lawyer who helped his family and helped him in some of these previous arrests and trials and so on. He, for example, his mother is a Democrat, and he was very angry when his mother threw him out of the house. And that is thought to be a possible reason why he became such a strong, devoted Republican, assuming that this is all that he is. Which does seem more likely, actually, than that he was set up but by the Democrats to look like a Republican. In any case, this, one of the things that this shows, well, a couple of things, it shows that, you know, when you have a child who is 14 years old and or a teenager, or any relative or anyone that you care about, but certainly the younger they are, the easier it is to get them, to force them to have mental health treatment or to be seen by, to be evaluated by at least a psychiatrist. There are, you know, certainly the person typically does something, whether it's a danger to themselves or a danger to others that you can call the police about. Or when he was younger, you know, perhaps he was gravely disabled, not able to take care of himself. I mean, he seems to have cobbled together these various odd jobs, but he was definitely living, he was living in his van, which is where it is thought that he made these pipe bombs. Although again, that just seems a little strange. I mean, you can certainly imagine a possibility where if he was under the influence of someone else and they had him put his DNA and his thumbprint his fingerprint on the bombs. That's not beyond the possibilities if someone was setting him up to take the fall. So I think we have to keep all these things open because it's even this lawyer said that he did not think that he had the mental capabilities of finding everybody's addresses and sending them and having it, having the return address be Debbie Wasserman Schultz so that the pipons would be returned to her, you know, if they didn't reach their target. That was all very clever. And the lawyer who's known him for years does not think that he has that intellectual capability. So we will see. But it does show, one, that tough love does not work. Throwing a mentally ill person out of your house instead of somehow figuring out how to get them mental health treatment. I mean, the most that he got was with one of these convictions where he was in possession of steroids. The judge sent him to some kind of a program for drug abuse or anger management or something or other. It was a 12-step program. It was a program that didn't address the underlying mental illness is what it was, but it was something, but it wasn't enough. So, and I'm giving you some examples to help you ponder this. Of course, in this past, in recent days, recent weeks, we've been having a lot of domestic terrorist incidents that have made us all think more about that than we usually do. Now, one of them that you might well not have heard about happened on October 24th, and it was called the Jeffersontown Kroger shooting. Jeffersontown is in Kentucky, and there was a killing of two Black people who were shopping at a Kroger store in Jeffersontown, and they were shot by a white man, and, well, he's a suspect. And this man was, and whose name is Gregory Bush, he was 51, and he had tried first to enter the First Baptist Church of Jeffersontown, and that's a predominantly Black church. But he couldn't get in because the doors were locked. So, and they know this because they have him on surveillance camera. So after he failed to get into the church, he went towards the grocery store. He shot the man inside the grocery store, and he shot a woman in the parking lot. And the police are considering this a hate crime. Now, talk about mental illness. This man had a Facebook page, the alleged shooter, had a Facebook page where he described himself as paranoid schizophrenic. So, you know, another thing that all of this shows, and I'm not connecting him to ISIS, but, you know, this would be a hate crime, an act of domestic terrorism, what it does show, though, there is a pattern that people who have mental illness are more vulnerable, to being influenced by people who want to commit terrorist acts, but also just being, whether it's domestic terrorism or foreign-inspired terrorism. With this world, let's put it this way. As I was saying at the very beginning of the show, we are all under more stress than in recent memory, I mean, other than 9/11 and so on. But these things in these recent weeks where, and currently, with the elections, with American, you know, you could call people in activists in the two political parties, in a sense, domestic terrorists, because people are acting out more crazily than ever. And it pushes people, it's very hard for people to live in under these kinds of stressful conditions. And it pushes people who are otherwise I sort of bear on the edge, it pushes them over. It can push them over. And of course, a whole other issue is how we need better mental health treatment in America. I'll save that. But certainly that is implied in all of this, because there have been examples of terrorists who have been seen before they committed an act by mental health professionals who didn't keep them in the hospital. And that the examples of that typical, you know, good examples of that was the terrorist who, the ISIS influenced terrorist who came from Alaska to Florida and perpetrated a terrorist attack. He had been put, he had been committed to a psychiatric hospital, but not long enough. And then another example, of course, is the Parkland shooter, who was never committed, unfortunately, and should have been, but he did have brushes with mental health professionals who did not take him seriously enough and who did not do the right thing by not committing him involuntarily in Florida, Baker acting him, it's called, in Florida. So now let's go to the Pittsburgh shooter. The Pittsburgh shooter, the shooting took place on Saturday, October 27th. What is fascinating about him, his name is Robert Bowers, and what's he's 46. What's fascinating about him is that, and this really hasn't come out yet, but I've been, I was asked to comment upon this by a journalist, so it will be coming out soon. Apparently, there's very little known, very little that's been in the press about this, about Robert Bowers. And which is very strange, but it's apparently been very hard to dig up information about him. But one thing that's been dug up is that his father, Robert Bowers' father, committed suicide on the same date, which turned out to be a Saturday on that date, years ago. So, and this was when the father was on bail, out on bail, for raping and abducting a young girl in Squirrel Hill, where the synagogue shooting took place. So the same date, and it happened to be a Saturday, which is when the synagogue shooting took place. Same date, Saturday, in Squirrel Hill. I call that an anniversary reaction, a tragic anniversary reaction. Obviously, this was an act of domestic terrorism, a hate crime. The temple was called the Tree of Life. There are a number of ironies in here. The Tree of Life, when Robert Bowers shot 11 people dead and injured 7. And also, there was one of the services that were going on in there was a baby naming and bris, in other words, a welcoming of a baby into the world, a celebration of life. And then a third irony is that one of the rabbis, who of course is always there on Saturday morning, that's Shabbat, he stayed home, which was so unusual for him, because his wife was sick. So his life was spared. And of course, this Robert Bowers, you know, there were warning signs on the online social network called Gab, where his moniker was One Dingo, and a dingo is a wild dog. So basically, he was telling the world that he's a wild dog, and it was a red flag that something, he was going to erupt. I mean, what would people, you know, no one, the website Gab is one where lots of people are posting hate speech. Robert Bowers posted a lot of anti-Semitic comments, notably against the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, HIAS, in which this synagogue, the Tree of Life, was a supporting participant. Now, that is, you know, it's interesting. There was two things that triggered him, so to speak, on this date, on October 27th. One, it was the date, as I said, that his father committed suicide, but also it was in connection to the migrant caravan getting closer and closer, because the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society was a society that helped, originally it helped Jewish refugees come to this country, and then it was helping refugees from all countries, lots of other countries, become settled, helping them settle in America. So, and in fact, he posted, Robert Bowers posted on this Gab website, HIAS likes to bring invaders in that kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics, I'm going in. So that was the last post that he wrote when he then went in to do the synagogue shooting, which was the deadliest attack on the Jewish community in the United States in history. So there are all of these, you know, tragic one-offs or worse than anything else. I mean, we had the Vegas shooting that was the worst shooting in America. Now we have the worst Jewish shooting in America. I mean, there, you know, it's then Parkland was the worst high school shooting. I mean, there are all of these, it just keeps escalating. Now, to get back to the migrant potential invasion, has there been so far anyone identifying exactly, naming a person in the caravan who is an ISIS, an ISIS sympathizer, an ISIS soldier? No names have been mentioned so far. However, it has been said that, you know, these things are kind of common sense. Newt Gingrich, whatever you feel about Newt Gingrich, the former House Speaker, what he said just makes common sense. He said, if you were a terrorist and wanted to get in the United States and you saw 10,000 people trying to get into the United States, how unlikely is it that you might decide to join them? I mean, people, let me just say this, I'll end with this. It has been known, people have been identified long before the migrant caravan came to be, that there have been terrorists trying to and succeeding in crossing the borders, both from Mexico and from Canada. We have bona fide documented examples of that, one or two people at a time, okay? So why would anyone question the fact that this is a perfect setup for people who are terrorists, who have plans to create ISIS-inspired terrorist acts in the United States? They would be idiots to not take advantage of this situation, because there are too many people. It is so easy to get lost amongst this caravan. It's just too inviting a possibility to miss. Well, thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist. If you would like to find out more about terrorism from me, your terrorist therapist, visit my website, terroristtherapist.com. And if you're a parent or teacher and want to build stronger nests for your kids to become more resilient, check out my new award-winning book, Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. It's the first and only book about terrorism for kids. You can find it wherever books are sold or directly from the publisher at terrorismforkids.com. Terrorism4kids.com. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist.
Thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show on Renegade Talk Radio with your host, Dr. Carol. We hope listening to the show has made you feel calmer, more resilient, and more able to reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. You can also check out past shows on Renegade Talk Archives for more insights.